I don't think trans is a thing.
Hello, welcome to Peak Trans, the podcast about trans issues by me, Jen Ives, a trans comedian, talking to comedians that aren't trans. It's a good concept. It makes sense in my brain. I hope you're doing well. Thank you to everybody who listened to like the ones before this. We've got a really good. I said we've got a really good. Like there's someone else here. Like me and my production company and my my producer. Like we've got a really good podcast coming up for you. It's just me. It's just me sitting in my hovel of a bedroom, surrounded by houseplants and like dirt. But yeah, we've got a good one for you today. This is Will Duggan, the comedian who is from up north but now lives down south like a traitor. We had a really interesting discussion, partly about sports, but also about masculinity and comedy as well. I've chosen to include a bit of comedy chat in this one, pretty much because like it's still relevant to the conversation about trans issues and gender and all that kind of good stuff. I hope you enjoy this one. I think it was really fun to talk to Will. As you'll hear in the podcast, we had a chat. Anyway, look, I won't waffle on. That opening as well that you just heard, that's what we call in the trade clickbait. If you keep listening, you'll hear that he's, you know, he's not as transphobic as he first comes off as. I hope you enjoy it. I think I've said that like 21 times. And I'll be back as usual, you know, at the end of the podcast to shamelessly shill my Patreon account. Okay, guys, bye. But anyway, yeah, so welcome to the Peak Trans Podcast, something that I'm trying out, where I'm talking to, I assume, and I have made a lot of assumptions for this podcast, but I assume you are a cisgendered straight white male. Is that correct?
Yes, spot on. Every bit of it.
Great. Because I realise that I've made more sort of like assumptions during this than anyone else, really. So,
many people would you say that to, and they go, "Oh, did you just assume my gender?"
Yeah, well, there probably would be quite a few. Alistair Beckett King wasn't happy with me calling him a lesbian, so I've got it all wrong.
Who the fuck does he think he is? How dare he?
I know. So do you know, have you heard the term peak trans before? Do you know what it means, what it refers to?
I have only seen the term peak trans on your videos where you claim it's a news network.
Oh, great. Great. That's what I've been hoping for, really. I was hoping that it's sort of like one of those things where I'm trying to reclaim the term. But so you don't know what the actual meaning of it
comes from? I don't. I've got no idea. I thought you'd invented it.
All right. No, I wish I invented it. It's catchy, but no, what it means is, it's basically, I found it on some Tumblr blog, like quite a long time ago, and it's, it was a blog where people could come on and give their stories of their peak trans moments, which basically refers to the moment when they thought it had all gone a bit too far, and they'd finally had enough with trans issues and hearing about us and, you know, think we're pushing it too far.
Oh.
And that was their peak trans moment. So it'd be things like, you know, oh, I used to know, I knew one in the 70s, and you know, they were perfectly fine with just being regarded as someone in the middle, or some kind of he, she, or whatever. But then they started demanding rights, and that was my peak trans moment, and now I've joined the gender critical movement.
So. Right, so peak trans isn't a thing that trans people do or have.
Not typically.
No. So it's me being like, oh, look, I've got no issue with trans people, but listen.
It's you after this podcast, basically. You're gonna...
That fella in a dress shouldn't be playing football with others.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad you mentioned football, actually, because I was trying to think of like a subject that we could talk about, because obviously I don't really know you massively well, but I made another assumption about you as a straight, white, cisgendered male. I made the assumption about you that you like sports. Is that correct?
You have. No. Well, no.
No. Oh, no. This is... Okay.
I do like...
No, tell me about it.
I do like sports. I just don't care about sports. So
right, okay.
If you rang me up and said, Will, we've we're someone short for a game of five-a-side. Do you want to play? Mm. And I was free. I'd say, yeah, why not? Let's have a game of five-a-side. There's a comedian's football game in London on Tuesdays, pre-pandemic. I'd go and play that. I'd go and watch the local team occasionally, because it's like lower league football, so you take your own cans. But I don't care. I couldn't tell you who the Premier League top goal scorer is. I couldn't tell you. I reckon I couldn't name more than three of the current England football team.
Okay.
Marcus Rashford?
Don't ask me. Oh, wait, is he the guy who likes the nice things for school lunches?
Yeah, he likes kids to have their dinner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, I know about him. And at the time, you know, when all of that was like in the news, I remember thinking, oh, I'm gonna follow them on Twitter just because I, you know, agree with them. And I like, you know, kind of what they're putting out there and stuff.
Harry
and then
Kane.
I unfollowed them literally within a day because it was just too much football stuff. And I was just like,
he
ruined my timeline.
He loves it.
Yeah, he loves it. This five-a-side comedians football team, tell me about that. Because I always find it funny when comedians try and do other things, you know, socially.
It's not...
It's not the Daniel Kitson one, is it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Oh, okay. I've heard about this. I've heard about it through the grapevine. Do you do that then?
I do. I did.
Oh, wow.
I haven't for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's
I know
really
he
nice.
Likes it.
Oh, it's great. It's just there's about maybe 100 to 200 people on this mail out. And then every Monday, he's like, who's play football tomorrow? And the first 22 to respond, play.
22?
11 aside.
Oh, it's 11. Oh, okay. And where does that happen then? Is that in the park?
It's down at, it's near Crystal Palace, I think.
So what would you say is your favourite sport then? What sport is the one that you have the most patience for?
Wee bowling.
Wee bowling. Wow. Okay. Are you good at it?
No. I'm not good at any sports, Jen, is the issue.
All right. Okay.
I'm 34, so this shouldn't be something that I'm proud of, but I'm pretty good at catching.
Are you good at... Oh, wow, okay. I'm not, but that's... So would you be good on a baseball team then?
Maybe. I also used to work in a ping pong bar in Shoreditch, but I wasn't very good at the game. You don't need to be to work there, it's fine.
Also, you didn't really need to say Shoreditch. I'd already guessed that's where that would be.
Well, actually, there's another one in Farringdon, so think on.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So as the subject of this podcast is about trans people and stuff like that, I thought I'd just ask you, so we could talk a little bit about trans people in sports, if you don't mind talking about that.
Yeah.
But also, who do you know any trans people? And if so, who was the first trans person you ever met? Knowingly.
Well, I know you, obviously.
Well, you do now. I mean, you've got that get out of jail free card. You can say, no, I've spoken to Jen on the podcast, but
I also know Bethany Black, comedian Bethany Black.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Known her for a long time.
Cool. Well, that's amazing. You've got a great one there.
Do I know any other trans people? I'm aware of Caitlyn Jenner.
Who?
Do I mean Caitlyn Jenner?
Yeah, no, you do. I'm just joking. everyone knows Caitlyn Jenner. The reason I asked that, right, is just because, like, people say a lot that trans people are on the rise and that we're sort of, like, taking over. And there's a lot of, like, talk about us in the media. But usually when I ask people that question, they don't really know that many trans people and they're not really, like, a part of their sort of group. And you mentioned Bethany Black, and that's great, but like in my experience in stand-up comedy, like I've only met like two or three other trans people, and one of them wasn't Bethany Black, because I think doesn't she live up north?
She does in Manchester.
Yeah,
that's how I know.
So is it... Yeah, right. Are you in Manchester now?
No, I'm in London, but I was in Manchester
at
the ages of 18 and 30.
Oh, okay. What, just those ages?
I went to university at 18. Oh, no, okay. 18 to 30, like a really long lad's holiday. 18 to 30.
Yeah. What did you do at university?
Archaeology.
You told me that. Yeah. That's
I should have
crazy.
Said gender studies. I should have said gender studies for the good.
You should have said it. Have you read any books on gender studies?
I've read Fat is a Feminist Issue. Is that a gender studies thing? Kind of.
I guess. Or maybe. I don't know. I've not read it. So I only read books directly about myself.
I've read Tipping the Velvet.
Oh, okay. About I've women, heard of that one.
About lesbians just doing it in the Victorian times. Good book.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah, I've heard of lesbians. Yeah.
Yeah. They, well, you're trying to get rid of them, aren't you? You well, personally.
It's it's going okay. It's I managed to get rid of a few, but so that's good. So you know some trans people. How do you feel? Are you aware of the sort of like the debate around trans people in sports and stuff?
Yes, sort of. Caster Semenya, is that someone?
Yeah, Caster Semenya. But I think with Caster Semenya, I think then they're not trans. That and that's like one of the interesting.
They just got really high testosterone levels or something, isn't like it?
Yeah,
they're so a biological kind of woman, aren't they?
They are a cisgender biological woman. Yeah, I think that's the thing.
Which
is,
you
like,
hate.
I mean, I do. I absolutely hate all of them in my family. So that's why we don't speak anymore. But I do actually speak for my family. It's an ongoing joke that I probably should stop doing at this point.
I wasn't going to touch it with a barge pole, Jen. I was going to leave it.
Yeah. No, I know.
As long as you're happy.
No, with the Caster Semenya thing, I think what it was it's, you know, people were in, it's like the opposite way around. It's like people were saying, no, your testosterone levels are too high. You cannot compete against these other women because you are basically, in our eyes, like a default man. Yeah. Which on the one hand is at least they're sort of sticking by their own rules, but on the other hand is kind of shows like the problem, which is that sports is just kind of stupid in general, in the sense that like it's gendered that specifically. If they just lined everybody up based on their actual closest sort of like physical ability, then it wouldn't matter for gender. Yeah. That's my opinion on it anyway.
I have the nice privilege of not having to have opinions on these kind of things, and it's really shining through, if you know what I mean. Like, I very much can just keep my head in the sand and the world will pass me without much ripples in my direction. But what confused me was, like, she, even if you don't include any trans issues or in sport and that kind of thing, she is literally everything that they claim a woman should be.
Yeah.
And they won't let her play the game because she's too good at it, which is what sport is. You want to find the one that's the best at doing it.
Exactly, yeah. And I was kind of talking to Alistair King about this because it came up as well, which was about this idea of, like, you know, don't all athletes have advantages and disadvantages against each other? Yeah. Like, isn't that something they all have? Like there, like one of the examples that we talked about was like, it was, you know, and I don't know anything about sports, so I might be completely wrong on this, but if there are runners and they're doing a run for like the Olympics or whatever, do they all have to be the same height? Do they all have to have the same leg size and stuff
well,
like that?
Interestingly, no, I might be wrong about this, and if I am, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Tell me
I need to know.
Not in the Olympics, and one of the reasons that they've got Usain Bolt is too tall. If you look at the way that he starts, when he goes from the blocks to up, apparently he does it, quote-unquote, wrong because he's so tall, but then his legs are so good he catches up. So he's actually at a disadvantage because of his height. So they are all over. But it's the muscle fibers.
Yeah.
But in the Paralympics, they have to have the same disability, don't they?
Right.
Like, you can't have a swimming race with a guy with one leg and a guy that's blind, because whilst the blind guy is disabled, he has got an advantage in a pool over a one leg Fred.
Sure. No, that makes sense. So are you trying to say that trans people should be in the Special Olympics? Is that kind of what you're...
Am I? Fuck. No way. Don't you dare edit that round.
This is kind of what I was hoping for with this podcast. I think I've got a few with ABK as well. It's like, I've got a few little bits that I could use to all of your disadvantage. I could ruin you. I could ruin you in a heartbeat.
You just want a little clip of me saying, I don't think trans is a thing. I've done it now.
Yeah. I mean, you did it just for me. Thank you so much.
I've given it to you on a plate. Can I ask you a question actually?
Yes, please do.
Where do you, I know the answer, but where do you stand on, say, somebody transitioned male to female, they're a woman. We can both accept that. Do you think it's fine that they can compete in women's sports?
Yeah, but I would say, you know, I don't view it as a black and white issue. I think it comes down to kind of what I said before. It comes down to what the general expectation is in sport and the safety of everybody involved. Yes, but I would expect that from any scenario in sports. Yeah. So whether it be you know, cisgender women or whether there be trans women involved. The problem I have with it, and this is the problem I have with all of these issues, right? It comes from like a social point of view, which is if we're going to live in a society where I am allowed to exist in the sense of like, you know, there's a precedent for my life, you know, I can go to the gender clinic, I can get my documents legally changed, I can present as and be accepted as woman in, you know, most of my life. Mm-hmm. Is it then fair that there'd be this huge public institution that says, actually, no, like that's as far as it goes. And actually this is where that stops. Like, is it socially irresponsible to sort of have all of that other stuff and not allow for it to reach its logical conclusion? So with the sports thing, my point of view on it is literally just if two people have the same sort of body, that there's no risk of anyone getting killed or getting seriously hurt, and if both parties agree that is, you know, that they're both comfortable with that, then I don't see why gender should even come into it. I mean, I don't advocate for anything, but hypothetically in this scenario I'm advocating for the fact that I think sports should just be completely reformed. And I don't like seeing women's football, men's football. I don't like seeing either of them. But I would like to at least see them competing against each other if they have to. You know,
football, just football.
Football, yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah. I don't like football.
11 players. 6 of them are men. 5 of them are women. They're just the 11 best players available to that team at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Absolutely.
Why not? It's football, isn't it? It doesn't. I just don't see what the point of it is, really.
I was listening. Gendered sports is still like, sports is so behind where it should be. I was listening to, oh God, I'm going to butcher this. I was listening to a podcast about an Irish female boxer, and she just lost everything. It was really sad. But they still, female boxers still wear the head guards in the ring. It's like, oh, we've got to protect the little woman heads.
Mm,
the men, that's interesting. And men don't.
No.
But
then again, there are UFC, there are women UFC fighters, aren't there?
Yeah, that's the fucking Wild West.
Yeah, I know. But this is my point, though. Like, we're fine with watching people, like whether they're men or women, we're fine with them watching them literally like batter the shit out of each other, and sometimes to the point where they are, you know, they've gone over to brain damage territory.
Yeah.
But we're not happy with, for example, on the other side of the spectrum, we're not happy with like a trans woman running against a cisgender woman, and that just seems weird to me. It's hard to take one side seriously when you've got that sort of,
yeah, it's a really
juxtaposition
good
for me.
I'm fine, I mean, with it.
But
yeah, I can't.
Well, you would say that on my podcast, wouldn't you? You're not going to come in here and say no. Like, I think everybody has a limit of things that they, like, it's like, this is the point, it's like a limit of understanding as well, because like I don't understand anything about sports. Like, I don't know what the actual rules and regulations are. All I know about is what I see in the news and like what's being shown to me as like a controversy or whatever. But every time I see it, I think, well, I can think of a solution to this issue, but it requires like a lot more work than I think that they're willing to do. You know, they would much rather things just go on as they are and not include others than actually make like actual change in the way it's run. So I mean that's not the reason I don't like sports. The reason I don't like sports is because it's fucking boring.
I'd love to know what Caitlyn Jenner thinks about that particular sports thing, seeing as she was an athlete.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's interesting. I think, well, Caitlyn Jenner, she's more on the conservative side generally, so she probably just, I would imagine that she would have like quite a hardline view on it, to be honest with you. I think I've heard her say that she kind of agrees with the separation. I might be misquoting her, but I don't care because it's Caitlyn Jenner. But
can I ask you a question about ethics?
Yes, ask me about ethics.
Not ethics, but like acceptance for a trans person. So like, Caitlyn Jenner is her name.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to dead name her in my life on purpose ever. But when it comes to the Olympic medals, what's the correct nomenclature to use? Is it still just Caitlyn?
That is an odd question. I guess it depends on what they would request. But I think if we're going on like purely like a sort of like philosophical thing of it, like, you know, when people change their name, you generally respect that, you know, if it's away from trans issues. Like, for example, someone getting married, or you don't, or even just a nominal deed poll name change. Like when people talk about David Bowie, you know, they might mention that David Bowie had another name in the past, and they might tell you what it is, but they don't generally say, you know, it wasn't David Bowie who did this stuff, it was this other person. I think it only comes up when they want to romanticize it. I think what it comes down to is just a kind of weird way that we view trans people, in the sense of like, it's seen as like, you're this one person, and then you decide that actually, you know, you want to be this other person, and you transition to that other person. But in my experience, or at least the way I like to view it, is that it's not really that at all. You know, it's and having a new name is just a part of it's just a part of the process of like putting a marker on where you are in life, but to make your life easier, obviously.
She was always Caitlyn Jenner. The before bit was
in her mind. I'm sure she was. Yeah, yeah.
That's a good answer.
People get hung up on names, right? And I've heard this thing as well, where people say like, "Oh yeah, but surely that was, you know," and I'm gonna say the name because, you know, it's out there. But surely it was Bruce who won those medals and not Caitlyn. But this is the problem. Like, people see you as a different person because you've got a new name. But when you get married, you know, you're not perceived as a different person because you've taken on a new name. Or, you know, people have these signifiers that represent new chapters of their life. It shouldn't mean that everything you did before that point is null and void, and that you are a new person who can't look back on your past. Because this is a big problem. Like, a lot of trans people feel ashamed about their past, or they don't like to look at their old photos, or, you know, sometimes they don't talk to their friends and family and things like that, because people tell them like, oh, you know, it felt like you died, or things like this. And I just don't think it's helpful. I think it's a lot healthier if people are allowed to have a past as well, and not be ashamed of it.
I saw a really, you know, Steen Raskopoulos, comedian.
No, who's that?
So Steen Raskopoulos is a comedian, improviser, but he's the brother of Jordan Raskopoulos.
Oh, I know. Well, yeah, well, I know them.
Another trans person that I know, Jordan Raskopoulos.
Okay, there you go.
But
you're getting good points. You're at about B plus, I'd say.
I'll take that.
On being a trans advocate, good job.
But Steen did a show about, like, it was a long thing, but there's a bit in it I remember watching years ago. It's about when Jordan first transitioned. He couldn't.
Yeah.
They had a really strained relationship for a while, because he couldn't get out of his head that this woman had killed his brother.
Yeah.
But then he worked for her, and he's like, that's really stupid, and I love her very much. It's fine.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because it's something that I've experienced as well, and you get put in a weird position because you want to give people time and respect that it is, you know, an adjustment and is a strange thing. But at the same time, you can't help but feel like it's a little bit melodramatic, you know.
Totally.
Like, no one's died. It's damaging to tell someone that they've died. You know, you're only gonna mess with their head with that, and you're gonna encourage them to go about as if they are, you know, which is sort of like what I did. I was like, well, if you think I'm a new person, I'll be a new person, you know.
Jen Ives.
Jen Ives, yeah. Superstar Jen Ives.
Peak trans superstar, Jen Ives.
Exactly. They created a monster. But the thing is, most of the time people do come around to it and they do realise that it was a bit stupid to say that you felt like you died. It's just, I would never dream of telling anyone that if I felt like they died, unless they actually did die.
I don't want to be an advocate for anything either, Jen, but I think if someone is dead, you can say they're dead.
You can, yeah. You can dance on their grave if you want to. I'm not advocating that either.
David Bowie, we mentioned earlier, is dead.
He's dead. He is dead, yeah. But he lives on through his music, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. How many dead people do you know? I bet I know more dead people than I do trans people. And no one's complaining that dead's on the rise.
trans people die as well.
Oh,
do you know any
brilliant.
Dead trans people?
You won everything that we've got, didn't you? This is my peak trans moment. Now that the trans people are dying like a good, honest, God-fearing cis person, this is too much.
I know. It's the only way we'll get true equality, is to just die. One thing that's constantly in the news in regards to trans people is, like, this celebrity said this thing about... Like, everybody wants to weigh in on the subject, right? So you've got people like J.K. Rowling and, everybody, like James Dreyfuss, everyone's chiming in
to give their two cents.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, is are there any people that have been ruined for you by this whole thing?
James Dreyfuss.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think he's so funny and is in so many things that I like. But the real problem is that it doesn't affect... Like, this isn't the issue that I now can't watch Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. Like, it's...
Yeah.
What he's saying is pain, hurtful. Obviously, we work in comedy. I have an issue now with a few episodes of Partridge and Black Books and the IT Crowd because of older... What's his face? He's gone now.
Well, it's interesting to get your perspective on it because, so for me, like, for example, with James Dreyfuss, I'm literally rewatching Gimme, Gimme, Gimme now because I love it. And, I don't struggle personally with watching the things. Like, even the IT Crowd, which is not my favourite programme. Like, I have to stress that none of Gray and Lenhan's stuff was particularly my sort of, like, I don't love those sitcoms, but I did like them. I did enjoy them. And it's not that episode that I think trans people have any problem with Graham Linhan about. Obviously, they pointed out that it's wrong and a bit, like, of its time and you know, just shit. But it's the other stuff, you know, it's outside of that. It's the ultra defensive, you know, going down weird rabbit holes and trying to eliminate people's rights is, I think, what people get more stressed out about rather than the actual episodes themselves.
But I think the two are linked, aren't they? Like,
they are.
I know, outside of his work, the horrible things, let's say Linehan, has been doing. Yeah. I'm aware of that. But then, you know, I've got that as a little box in my head. But then when I sit down of an evening and think, oh, I'm going to watch some Partridge, say, and then the two Irish guys turn up, that shouldn't be the time when I'm thinking about Graham Linehan, the psychopath. But he forces me to. He ruins my day by seeing him.
To be honest, I do have that with things like Woody Allen stuff.
Yeah, Woody Allen's one. I mean, I know we've mentioned him three times now, but David Bowie, all this weird sex stuff. It's like...
Yeah, that's the thing that people don't want to talk about with David Bowie, isn't it? I'm not saying that, like, oh, we should, like, we're breaking it here first on the on the Peak Trans podcast. But yeah, like, there are accusations against David Bowie, and do you know what there are with, like,
all of them,
pretty much every British rock star. Yeah. You know, it's hard to enjoy any of them really on that level.
But I, for better or worse, I've had these arguments a few times. I am quite good at separating the art from the artist. Like, yeah. I was listening to Michael Jackson the other day.
No.
It's good songs.
this is the problem, right, is that I definitely have it when it's with things that aren't maybe as authored. Like, so, for example, like, there are films that I still like by people who have most definitely been cancelled. But I always think, well, they weren't the only person involved in this film. You know, there's all these actors in it. There's all the people that put money into it. There's all the people who like filmed it and all that kind of stuff. And then we're letting just this one person, the director or whatever, who in the past, like in like the 1920s or 30s, like the director wasn't considered like the auteur, like the person who was like, you know, it was all their voice or whatever. They were considered like just a part of the production as much as anybody else. But when it's someone like Woody Allen or whatever, I do struggle because it's just all his films are just so much about him and are just so like confessional and like, yeah, it's hard to separate that kind of thing.
I did have issue with Louis C.K. as well, particularly because
yeah,
obviously what he did was terrible, but he is an incredible stand-up. But then when you... I haven't listened to his stuff for ages, but I remember afterwards remembering a routine and he's basically telling us what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like he's hiding in plain sight, almost like Savile. And I think that is an extra layer of fuck you to the listener.
Well, I don't know who said it, but there is a quote by some person who said like something to do with like, well, people tell you who they are, so you should like listen to them.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, I wish I could remember who it was. It was me. I said it. I just said it just now.
I am Will Duggan.
That's good to know. That's good to know. And you are not transphobic, right?
I don't think so. I did get called transphobic once.
Oh, tell me about that. That's interesting.
Well, so we were talking, it was in a group, mixed gender. I don't think anyone there was trans, but it was both male and female people. And somebody had said, would you go out with a trans person?
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I think I would be fine with it because I'm not a dickhead.
Mm-hmm.
But I would find it hard to go out with somebody with a penis because that's not my sexual preference. I don't like, I don't even like my own that much.
Sure.
They said that was transphobic. So you can tell me, am I transphobic? I don't know. If I am, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be.
No, I don't think you are. I think that's like a really complicated question. And I think it's one of those ones that doesn't, again, like everything doesn't have a definitive answer, you know.
But
If I was going to go really like analytical on it, I would say that if you define transphobia as, you know, whether, you know, like how racism can be unintentional, you could say that there is something transphobic about that in the sense but bear with me a sec. I'm not saying you are transphobic. I'm just saying that if, from my point of view, what that says, like what it feels like to hear that, is just that, that you perhaps hold an importance over one particular body part over a personhood. Like but that being said, everybody has sexual preferences and there are sometimes things that people can't get past and that is completely fine.
I wouldn't go out with someone that wears glasses either.
Exactly. I wouldn't go out with a French person. So there you go. I would never
close to saying the worst one then.
I would never dictate what somebody, despite what people accuse me of, because that's one of the big accusations against trans people at the moment as well, is like, you want to force lesbians to go out with male genitalia people and all this kind of stuff. But I think it just comes down to like a more philosophical thing, which is just like, why is the genitalia at the forefront of people's minds?
It's a good question.
But then again, right, I have the same preferences, you know. I have similar preferences. Like, if I'm being 100% honest here, I'm not against the idea of going out with, for example, a trans man who perhaps doesn't have a penis, but I'm not against it theoretically. I've never done it. I've never sought that out. And who knows how I would actually feel about it come the time, you know? A penis does hold some importance to me in a sexual relationship. So So there you go. So it's fucked up. Maybe that's internalized transphobia. I don't know. Like it's just a word, isn't it? And it has a lot of different meanings. So
Jen,
I'm trying not to throw you under the bus here.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I've got 5% battery, but if I unplug my microphone, fucking second USB's been an absolute dick.
Do you know what? I have a similar problem with my computer. Yeah, unplug your microphone. It's fine. We can take the hit on the sound quality.
Is the sound quality okay?
Yeah, no, it sounds fine. Yeah, I'm sure it will be fine. Don't worry.
Okay, yeah. Great. Sorry, you weren't trying to throw me under the bus.
Yeah, no.
We're both very transphobic.
No, it's one of those things. Like, I think it's important just to talk these things through. I think you know, if someone's calling you transphobic for that, I think it ignores the fact that you said that you would date a trans person. So that is, and you know, you're not entitled to, you know, nobody has to date anybody that they don't want to date. That'd be a crazy society.
I thought you meant I'm not entitled to date any trans people. You can't date a trans person.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, it's just like everything is just really complicated, isn't it? It's just really, really complicated. And until society views trans people equally, you know, it won't happen across the board.
Well, that's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the big one. That it's like, this is no new information for you, and I'm sorry to mansplain your own life to you, but it must be really hard sometimes.
Yeah. It's something I don't really talk about a lot, but it is, right? Because my job is to, like, well, I feel like my job is to, like, make fun of everything and, like, try and put, like, a lighthearted spin on it. And the thing is, like, I think a lot of people, I think to a lot of general observers who aren't in the trans world and stuff, I think their point of view of it might be something like, well, you know, things have moved on a lot since 20 years ago when documentaries were making fun of trans people and like all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's true. Like on the surface, like the face level of it, things have got better. You know, you do see a trans person in an advert occasionally eating a strawberry, or you see them you know, on a dating program or something like that. But in terms of like the law and the stuff and the conversations that I see happening on TV and stuff, I think things are genuinely getting worse at the moment in the UK. I genuinely think that like rights are slowly being stripped away, and in all honesty, I find it more difficult every day to sort of like there's so many jokes that I've stopped doing just because I, you know, I've changed my mind on things, and I've thought it's more important to like not make fun of that aspect of it, right? So I don't know. Yeah, I think it's getting worse, and sometimes it does get you down a bit. It does.
So this is bad, and I'm sorry about this. When I first started doing stand-up in the distant past of the late noughties,
right,
I had a joke that was transphobic.
Yeah.
But I would never have classed myself as. I thought I was just being funny. And then it was Bethany Black, comedian, called me out at a gig. She's like, well, you shouldn't... Don't say that. And I was like, oh, do you know what? Yeah, that's... you're right, that's not funny, and it's very much punching down. But that
tell me the joke.
I don't want to.
Oh please, come on, please. Because I hear, you know, I hear a lot of transphobic jokes. I frequently have to follow.
Yeah, but this is hard.
Do loads of them.
But I've spent the last 45 minutes saying I'm not transphobic, and I'm about
to
use. I know,
but there must be a part of you that wants to say it because you brought it up.
I don't want to say it. I want to tell you that I've learned a lesson.
Okay, well, do you want to tell me like the gist of it or what it was about it that was transphobic?
It was about the TV show Maury with Maury Povich.
Yeah,
there was a segment where five women came out, but one of them was trans. But that wasn't the word they used. It was like, which one of these women is a man?
Yeah, I think chick with a dick is the technical terminology in that scenario.
Yeah, stuff like that. and then it was turned into like a braying, like, you won't believe, like, there's no way that that's a fella, was all this stuff. But I was explaining it step by step in a very Route 1 open spot style. I just said what was happening. It wasn't nice. It wasn't nice. I take it back. I'm sorry.
You have redeemed yourself. Don't worry. You have confessed to your sins, and the trans mob. I will get them back. I will tell them to, when the time comes, you will be accepted into the fray. Don't worry.
I think
I think it's good. I think it's good to
Darcy Silver, comedian, another trans person I know.
Yes, I know Darcy.
That's got to be an A- now.
Well, don't push your luck. You're at about an A. Do you know Jordan Brooks? Do you know her?
Jordan Brooks.
Jordan Gray, sorry, not Jordan Brooks.
Because I know Jordan. I know Jordan Brooks very well.
Jordan Brooks is trans. Did you know that?
Because I tell you what, that would really change our relationship. Not in a bad way, but like, I had no idea, and I've been horrible to them.
Do you know Jordan Gray?
I don't know Jordan Gray.
Oh, okay, so you're not getting any further than a B plus, I think.
You got her name wrong.
Oh, yeah, but that doesn't matter. I try not to think about Jordan Gray because they're like one of my primary competitions, so I try not to think about them.
I don't know them. Should I know them?
No, you shouldn't. You should only know me. I'm the only trans comedian worth knowing.
I've named four that I know.
So this is another problem with it, right? It's like when there's so few trans comedians, and I don't even like the term, but it's it's how you have to do it. You have to market yourself in a certain way, and there's so few of us, I think, or at least there's so few of us that have managed to reach any level of sort of knowability, that you do feel like, well, I feel like they're all my competition, and I've got a lot more comfortable recently with not thinking that and trying to be happy for other people's success and things like that, and sort of like focusing just on myself. But it's a fucked up thing, I think, to feel that way about people who are just trying to do what you're doing. I don't know if you have that with any other straight white men
I have it with straight white men.
You've got a lot more competition, I guess.
Yeah, but I tell you, I have to, particularly recently, I've had to make a real concerted effort to be less bitter.
Yeah. Well, me too. Like, I mean, I'm glad you said that because I jealousy is like my primary emotion. So.
Yeah, I'm constantly, why has X got this and I didn't get it? Why can't I get an email reply from this person? How the fuck is that cunt on TV? Just all that kind of stuff, you know.
And I guess all comedians must feel that, except for the ones that are successful, you know, which you are, but you know what I mean. I just mean the ones who are like on telly or whatever.
I am nowhere near as successful as I'd like. I am surprised though, because it is trans comedians, there are so few of you. I thought it would be a more like nicer, like you're all mates, but you can't be fucking doing with it, mate.
I mean, it is on the surface, but do you know what the truth of it is? Is just that we don't see each other that often. You know, I have done a handful of gigs with Darcy Silver. I've done a handful of gigs with Jordan Gray. I've done a handful of gigs with a couple of other trans comedians, and there's always that awkward thing, right, where you go into a green room. There's another trans comic, a relatively successful one, and you know that you're going to have conflicting material. You're going to have a few things that are kind of similar. So you're just hoping that you can either go before them or you can, there'll be like a gap in between or something.
Yeah.
Because audiences, you know, they want variety as well. And unfortunately, when you go out there, they are expecting you to be different in some way. And you are, but it's that thing, isn't it? When there's something that you feel is like needs to be addressed, you have to address it. So, I've got a lot better at it now.
Do you feel that when you walk out, you're like, hi, just before we start?
I used to, and I made a conscious effort to stop doing it. I've gone out. I've done entire like 20 minute sets just not mentioning it, just to sort of test myself, and yeah, it works, it's fine, you know, I can do it. But that also feels weird sometimes, you know. It feels weird not to mention it, so I'm trying to figure out a way to kind of talk about it in a way that is just more matter of fact, just is a part of my life but isn't the thing, you know.
That's fascinating. Because there's, obviously, this is a privilege of mine. I walk on and do what the fuck I want and never take no quarter.
Yeah.
But I've heard that from, like, female comedians, from comedians who aren't white, that they go, I've just got to deal with this first and then we can get on with the stuff.
When you do comedy enough, when if you're gigging enough times in a week or whatever, and you start to notice patterns and you start to sort of notice what works, what doesn't. Sometimes there are things that, like, you can't put equations to, but something that when I was, you know, when we were doing comedy that I was noticing was that, like, yeah, if I don't mention it, if I don't address it, then there are certain members of the audience who literally are looking at me as if I am something they've never seen before. It's a really strange feeling. Like, they're sitting there with their arms crossed, waiting. It's just one of those things, you feel it. You can't really explain it. You just feel it. And you feel it in the reaction that you get.
Sophie Hagen said something quite similar. So I do her tour support, and she was saying, like, she did a joke in the tour show, and it was like, oh, I have to let you know that I'm aware that I'm fat.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, if I don't tell you, you start to wonder if I know.
Yeah, and it's permission to laugh as well, because a lot of the time, you know, you're a comedian and you're making fun of things about you that, like, sometimes that maybe people would feel uncomfortable laughing at if you haven't given them permission to do that yet. So by acknowledging that you are what they think you are, then they feel like they can laugh, I guess. I don't know. But as I said, it's something that I don't really do anymore.
I remember two white male straight, two of my lot. They had not an argument, but they'd both had a too similar routine about matching types of crisps to wine. And that's as bad as it gets for us, which is not bad. Like, yeah, listen, if we're both on, I'll say Monster Munch and you can't do the routine. Deal? All right, got you. Great.
So this is a question that I've been asking straight white male comedians. How do you feel about your gender? Is it something that you think about? Is it something that you... Because Alistair Becky King said that basically it's something that he very rarely ever thinks about. It's something that is just like... It's something that he doesn't even necessarily feel like he has. So in my experience, you know, it's something that I've thought about pretty much every day, all the time. So that's what, if I find it hard to hear that people just don't think about it sometimes. So what's your perception on that?
Well, you're not going to like this then. You find it hard to hear.
Well, not hard to hear, but I find it just mad, like, just kind of like unbelievable.
I never think about it. Never. When you text me yesterday saying, oh, I think some questions you might want to ask.
Yeah.
I had a question about it, because I can't imagine feeling like I'm in the wrong body. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't. It's just so far removed from my... Like, I have at times been angry at my body. That's through either I've hurt it doing something stupid, or I've made it go soft because I've not done enough exercise or stuff, you know. But I've never, it's always been the right one. There's never been any issue. So I can't imagine that. Yeah, sorry. Never.
That's interesting. It's interesting. But also, I mean, I will address that in a minute if you want, but about the body and that kind of language of, like, being in the wrong body or whatever. But in terms of gender, though, like, you know that you are a man and you have a certain idea of what that means to you, and so you don't think about your place in society as a man and as not a woman or anything like that?
So I don't think about my place in society at all. But I I like to think that I am sort of on the right side of history. Like, I'm aware of what being a man is in society.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, the good and bad, good and bad. But I never question why I'm doing anything.
Yeah, I think that's more what I mean. Yeah, because so, for example, like, I went to an all-boys school, right? And yeah. As a result of that, it felt like every expectation that was put on me was almost like an attack, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, no, I would be like, I'd be thinking, I don't know, that's not what I want for my future or whatever. That's not what I want to do. I don't want to be doing this. But so for you, I'm sure, like, I know that, like, people who aren't trans have those things too, but I'm guessing they're not as gendered then. So it's more just sort of like, do you just accept these things, like, you're happy with them, like these expectations of manhood or what's expected of you in the future, you know, whether that be having a family or, you know, there's so many different things that come under that bracket, but I guess you just don't think about it in such a gendered way.
Yeah, I think that, like, how old are you, Jen?
I'm 30.
Okay, so you're a little bit younger than me, but not much. We're of the same, like, generation.
Yeah.
I think that we are the first generation who sort of, we didn't get what we were told we'd get.
Right.
In that we were told, you work hard, you go to university, you get a job, you have money, you have kids, you have family, you buy a house, you go on holiday 3 times a year, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it all went wrong. And I think that because of that, like, I'm not making much sense, but
no, it's okay.
What would have been expected of a little boy in the 1960s growing up was expected of a little boy in the 1980s growing up, but didn't happen. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean.
So if you'd have told me at the age of like 5, my parents are like, they were really great, no badness in the family. But if you'd have told me that at 34, 35, I'd be living in a rented accommodation, I wouldn't be married, I wouldn't have any children, I would have a career, but not one you'd expect, and it would be going fine.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, well, he has not done anything that he's supposed to do. But the preceding 30 years between that and now, it's all just been okay. I'm happy with the choices I've made. Yeah. Is that what you mean?
Kind of, yeah. I guess so. No, that is interesting to me because what that sounds like to me is that it's like, that does play into expectations though, right? It's like, so do you feel like you had expectations put on you to have this kind of life, right? To maybe be married, have kids, have a steady, like, kind of job where you are more of the old fashioned, like, breadwinner or whatever. I guess, like, if you don't have that exact thing, you know, are you living up to what manhood is, in terms of what society expects of you? I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think yes and no. Like, I'm not living up to the classic, you know, breadwinner provider.
Yeah.
But I think that's. But also, I'm not viewed as a layabout and a slacker because society has changed a bit.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It has changed. Society has changed. I mean, it always does. So that's good in a way.
I think I fit into what a man is.
Yeah.
But I'm actually a modern man. I'm an ally. So.
you're in touch with your sensitivity, and you're a modern man.
Like, so at work, there is a couple of guys that I work with of sort of my age, and they're our age. There are a couple of guys who are maybe 20, 25 years older than us.
Yeah.
But the difference between us as men is like, so for example, because it's a clinical environment, I'm sanitizing my hands about 300 times a day. My skin is so dry. me and one of the lads were talking about what hand creams we were finding were good to combat this.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the older guys, he called us gay for using hand cream.
That's true, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but in that 20 years, the fact that that using gay is just an insult in that someone you don't know that well.
Yeah.
And just not, why wouldn't you put hand cream on? Your hands are dry.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
But we were all like, what the fuck are you on about? Like, it wasn't like that I was the lone dissenting voice saying, hey guys, that's not cool, you don't say that kind of stuff. Everyone.
How did he say it? Did he call you a big gay?
He went, oh, don't hang on,
you big gay.
You bloody Jesse, a couple of gays have realised. They've got some Neutrogena.
But like, see, I've got a real problem with this, not with that, but with the word gay, because I went to an all-boys school, so it's just like, to me, there's certain things that I just can't shake off. And for me, calling stuff gay is just like, it's what I do. I can't shake that right now.
You two are a couple of vendors over here, isn't it? With hand cream.
Yeah.
But like that, the fact that I think manhood has changed. Now, I do know men of my age who will still not moisturise and whatever, but the majority, being a man is different, I think, than it was.
For definite, yeah. Yeah, it is.
And I love it.
You love it. So, you know, you basically said about how you could never imagine what it feels like to be in somebody else's body or feel like you're in the wrong body or whatever. For me, I think one of the most damaging things that I don't know who to hold responsible for this. I feel like it's partly the trans community attempting to explain something in a simple way that feels unexplainable. Or if it's more to do with the media sort of like perpetuating this idea. But I don't think it's a useful descriptor when people say, I feel like I was in the wrong body. Because although I can attest to the fact that it does sometimes feel that way, I don't think it's close enough. I don't think that is what it is. I think it's closer to, I don't feel like I relate socially to this particular expectation of me, and I don't want that kind of life. I think it's more of a mix between the fact that, you know, if you acknowledge that gender is at least in, you know, I would say is a social construct, but some people don't think it is entirely, but that there's like, you know, there's a lot of room for sort of fighting against that now. And I just think saying I feel like I'm in the wrong body is just like the easy way out. It helps people to understand on one level, but I just don't think it's sort of like intellectually honest. And I think it creates this kind of idea of like that there's some kind of weird spiritual element to it, you know, like something went wrong when God was putting me together or whatever. And I just don't buy into that kind of thing. So
it is the very much the trans equivalent of GCSE chemistry.
Yeah, you mean like it's like
what it's basic it's not
biology,
real.
So, yeah.
No, like when you do like A level chemistry, which I did, thank you. Okay. Yeah, listen, that all of that, it's not really true what we told you for GCSE. It's just it was an all right model for then, but it's not real. I need to go, Jen, because I had to do another recording 10 bloody minutes.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me. I'm sure I can edit something good together with
thank
that.
Thank you for having brilliant. Me, most importantly.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, thanks. Is there anything you want to plug quickly before you go?
Yes. Do you know what? I have a Twitter account. It's @WillDuggan. Just go on there. That's where my stuff is. My podcast, National Treasures. My podcast, What Would You Rather? Follow me around. If you see me on the street, say hello, unless I look busy, in which case, please don't. And if, you know, thank you. That's it.
Okay, if you think of anything else that you want me to promote or whatever, just send it over and I'll do it in the edit. But thank you, Will.
The Karate Kid, the original with Ralph Macchio. Watch that film. Brilliant.
I haven't seen it, so I'll do that.
That's what I'm promoting, The Karate Kid.
All right. Thank you, Will. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Jen. Bye.
Bye. Well, then, how good and interesting was that? I always say that at the end, don't I? I always go, well, then, and tell you how to feel about it. You will think that it was an interesting and good podcast. No, but it is. Will Duggan is a lovely, lovely man who has a lot of thoughtful, interesting thoughts about things. Again, I don't know why I'm telling you that at the end. You literally just listen to it. I was going to plug Will's stuff, but he already has plugged it, hasn't he? You should go over and listen to his podcast. It's really good. I may or may not be on it soon. I couldn't possibly say. You can follow me, remember? Remember this. You can follow me on Twitter at Jen Ives Comedian. And you can subscribe to my Patreon, which is Peak Trans. Well, it's patreon.com/peak_trans. You have to literally do an underscore. Don't write the word underscore. Don't try and be clever. I've had quite a few people actually subscribe to it, which I'm very thankful for. I really do appreciate it. I don't know, like maybe in the next episode of this, I'll sort of like do like a, I'll do a shout out to everybody who follows the Patreon. That's what I've seen people do that, you know, like I'll say, thank you, Groovy Little Chick 95. And thank you, John with the Massive Dick 54 for giving me money that will go to charity. But it's lovely. It's lovely to have some money that's actually going to go to the causes. I was worried that no one would bother, like, joining the Patreon, but there are fun exclusive things for you there. Just a little bit of shameless self-promotion. It has to be done, you know. Where else can I do it other than my podcast? You know, I have a right to shamelessly promote myself, don't I? Stop having a go at me. I was recently featured, it seems kind of crazy to say this, it feels a bit unreal to say it, but I was recently featured in a New York Times article. That's the Times in like New York, like, oh, it's the New York Times, I'm walking here, oh, it's a yellow cab, hey, I'm walking here, I'm a New Yorker. It was pretty amazing. Like, they wrote a really nice thing about not just me, about transgender stand-up comedians, and about like the UK and the gender critical movement and like just the state of trans issues here. People that were mentioned is me, Bethany Black, Eddie Izzard, and others. You have to read it. You should read it. There's some really, like, the main reason you should read it is because the photographer who photographed me for it made me look really nice, actually, and limited sort of like the amount of chins that I have at the moment. So she's very talented. Basically, if you go on the newyorktimes.com website, you know, newyorktimes.com, and you'll find it, basically. It's called Britain's Transgender Stand-Ups Find Comedy in a Hostile Climate. I just wanted to promote that because it's a pretty big deal for me, you know. I've never got this level of press attention before, and it's pretty exciting. It's something you can show your family and go, look, I am doing something. But yeah, anyway, thank you for listening to the Peak Trans Podcast. I really do appreciate all of you guys' feedback. I've had some lovely feedback on the guests. And please message Will Duggan and let him know that you enjoyed it, if you did. Don't message him if you're going to be a dick, but message him if, you know, if you enjoyed it. And go and follow him. Anyway, I'm at that rambly stage, so I'm going to go now. Okay, I'm going. I'll see you guys later. Have a nice week, and I'll see you guys next Friday for another exciting episode of Peak Trans. Bye-bye.